All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, baby daddies that don't pay child support in the United States of America, welcome back to the NMR podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And today I have a very, very special podcast edition. And first and foremost, I want to give a shout out to everyone who supported the last, 13 years? It's been that long. We have an anniversary edition of the podcast with the original members of one of my favorite rock bands. I want to call them because they're all rock and roll. Vine Jester, so let's give it up.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And I want to introduce every single one of them. This is Kyle Guerrero.
Cheers. Yes, good to be here. And coincidentally, let me just say, it's your anniversary for the podcast, 13 years, and that's what we're here for, the 10th anniversary of our EP.
Cheers, guys.
Oh, that's a cool coincidence. Cheers to that.
Oh, he just had his anniversary?
Well, that's what he said.
Yeah, it's been 13 years as of last week, because long story short, me and Kyle started doing podcasts. And we did our first one. I was terribly hungover the next day, and we did it in my bedroom on my bed like this with two mics.
I remember that, dude. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And Cliff Conway, drummer extraordinaire, who also has an amazing YouTube channel. It's what? Triple C?
Is this my name, Cliff
Conway? Just Cliff Conway. If you ever want to see some of the baddest drum covers online, I think he ranks up there, and he's, to my opinion, he's totally underrated as an influencer. That's
badass drums and amazing parody covers.
Yeah,
best of both worlds.
Incredible. And of course, Justin Lepisto, man, thanks for coming on. This man, I'll just tell you something about Justin. When I first saw the band, me being a fan also, I could not get over, I mean, obviously I already knew the two, Cliff and Kyle, and Missy Nelman was their bassist. Justin just took it to a different level. Like, I've never seen a performer like that. You weren't just a bass player. You were a performer. And
thanks, buddy.
This guy hitting with a fucking cigarette in his mouth, you know, one-handed with a beer.
That's true.
And carry his own rig that was as tall as him. But, thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me,
man. And thanks for having us.
Hell yeah, man.
Thank you. Nice.
Cheers.
Cheers.
We're in the jungles of Southeast Asia, ladies and gentlemen. And
the reunion. By just a reunion.
So, the reason for the podcast, too, is, was it July, 2013? Is that correct?
That's when we released it, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago. This I like to call it on that one, but it's only 5 songs. Is it 5 songs, right?
Well, the re-release is going to be 5 songs, but the original was just 3.
It was just 3.
We sat in your house.
Yeah. So
his
I was getting rough demos of this stuff. I wasn't there for the process, obviously, because it was a very serious thing. And one thing I learned from a band working with a renowned, not only producer, but audio engineer, mixing engineer, Danny Belastocchi. Shout out, dude.
Cheers to Danny.
Yeah.
You guys delivered a very, I don't want to undermine it and say sonical, but that shit was a fucking masterpiece, man. That was masterpiece. Like,
thank you.
To this day, and confession here, I keep some songs on loop on purpose so they get paid. which is like pennies to the dollar, whatever. But tell me, what was it like? Like, first and foremost, ask me this. This is a story I don't know. How did you find Justin?
Man, that might have been a Craigslist.
Kind of like Lars and James, dude. And recycler,
From what I remember, I was looking into bands that actually was like really excited to play in. And at the time, I mean, Craigslist was the only avenue. This is like pretty much the advent of the internet back in the day. So it wasn't like, you know, Instagram videos and everything else or
where we are today.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty much Craigslist was the only avenue to find other musicians, and they were out in Rovia and I was in Tahunga in the valley. So they put out some stuff. that on Craigslist, I listened to it. I was blown away. I was like, this is exactly what I want to be doing. Like playing with these guys.
Yeah.
And like, so
we hit it off right away.
Yeah. We could tell there was a clear, like overlapping of influences.
We like the same bands. Yes. You showed me a bunch of bands too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that like I immediately like clung to these guys like, oh, okay, this is the music I want to be playing.
Yeah.
And that to me was the most important, is just playing music that I really was passionate about and I loved. And like these guys shared that passion and like it's shown through the music. It was, it was immediate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did he get the track, some tracks before, like the stuff that you guys were demoing, and then he started learning them, or you just guys that start hitting the ground order with the content?
Well, we had a couple of tracks already pretty much like figured out. We definitely wrote Manifest with Justin. Players of Paradox went through so many phases over the years. And just to clarify, the Craigslist, even though the album came out in 2013, we met. It had to be
2008.
Yeah, it had to be 2009, 2008.
No, it was 2008 for sure.
Was it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
We had been playing like for a bunch of shows, and then
I remember Racketeer was
probably the first song to say that.
Oh, Racketeer.
When I heard
Racketeer
Rabbit.
Yeah, Prelude, like all that shit. I was like, this is
what we're doing. Production sucks.
Yeah. So, well, Cliff.
Nobody's doing it.
Yeah, props to Cliff and you guys. I mean, these guys were using Pro Tools.
This guy recorded with a potato.
Yeah. Now, Cliff was recording our demos back in the day. And we have tons of demos that we've never like fully produced and recorded, but that was the stuff.
The songs
were
great though.
Yeah,
they were good, yes. You know, and they needed that extra level of production and lyrical.
That FK production wasn't cutting it.
Oh man! Shout out to FK.
It's Rafael Garcia. You know, he had a local studio, and a lot of bands went down there to try to, you know, get their demos hashed out, and it was helpful. You know, for sure, it was helpful. But
yeah, I think the one we gave him was I did it. Pretty sure.
Maybe yeah.
It was right around the same time.
Was this over at the dungeon?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what you call it.
That's a flashback.
Cliff's recording studio, we nicknamed the dungeon. That's where we rehearsed in his basement, right? His parents' basement.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, I wanted to say that the recording process and the writing process with Justin was, you know, just rehearsing, sharing riffs. Justin, as he was saying before, we shared a lot of interests in music. And Justin, for sure, has always been one of those, you know, listeners of music that is constantly looking for the next cool thing. He even just said like a second ago, he was like, what's your favorite album this year? And I'm like, fuck, I haven't really like been focusing on new albums. But you've always been that way.
He's one of those music mavens. Yeah.
He's always on the hunt. You know, he's always on the hunt for something new and fresh and interesting. Yeah. And that was what he brought to the plate for our band. And anyway, yeah, so we worked on Manifest with him, which was definitely a collaborative effort. Paradox was more of kind of like a lot of riffs that we all threw together. And Justin was, you know, helping us out with that to really come up with something cool for the chorus.
And we wrote it in Silver Lake.
Yeah.
Or in Echo Park, whatever.
Humanity, how did that come across? Humanity was maybe something similar, like a handful of riffs that we had. And then,
I think it was the initial riff, just that initial.
Yeah, Humanity was written first, right? Before the other ones. Because Players, we've been writing that for years.
Yeah, that was just a bunch of.
But it changed like for the better in the end, you know?
Absolutely.
Obviously.
Well, when we have that element, that melodic and, you know, groove based element that Justin brought to the table, we were able to really complete the tune and say, all right, this is where it should be.
Yeah.
Right. Justin made it work. And as far as Humanity is concerned, I remember going into the studio the day of, and you and Cliff had rewrote this little section between the first chorus and the second verse. And you guys remember that?
Not really.
I came to the studio ready to record my part, and you guys were already there. And I was like, wait a minute, what's going on with this part? And then I talked to Justin. Yeah.
But it was minor though.
He was laying it down. Yeah, it wasn't that big of a deal, but he was like, I remember I was like, what's going on here?
Yo, this isn't a G7.
They already laid down the track. And Justin's response was so funny. I was like, so wait a minute, you guys just recorded this thing? And I was like, what's going on? And he's like, surprise, fucker. Because he had been recording like all day and he was like drinking, he had like a case of beers.
What part was it? Oh, you already said.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, dude. I don't think I knew that then.
But it was interesting. Yeah, no, he said you guys
had worked on it. That was fucking interesting.
But I didn't know he said that.
Though. Yeah, no, you two worked on it. And you probably don't remember what the part is, but yeah, it was really funny. I never forgot your response. And I was like, you were so funny about it. I was like, all right.
No, it's funny because...
did you change the riff?
And it was dope. Like, yeah, yeah. I changed my riff
for,
to match.
For anyone that has not listened to Cognizance, it's the third track on the exactly. EP, and it has like a combination of a Tool vibe with
the intro
Breaking Benjamin. I don't know, it was like really, really like interesting, but
progressive, huh?
The thing here's compliments to Justin too, man. Like the bass line that you came up with, I mean, the overall production was like the three of you working together. There's one bass line that always catches my ear. You know which one I'm talking about, the one in Players of Paradox. So there's a second verse on that song.
Oh, yeah, when the bass changes.
Yeah. And I'm like, the minute I heard that, I was like, damn, you got me with that one. Let me hear that again. So I would scrub it back. And it's like, because it's kind of like...
it fills it out like a lot more.
It goes right with the melody, and then the complements it as the vocal line, obviously. But you're playing something different, and I'm just like, oh.
It's like the guitars stay the same, yes. The bass and the drums change.
Yeah,
it becomes more melodic.
But that was honestly, I'm not going to take full credit for that at all. I mean, that was a lot of that counterpoint was it was Kyle's idea. And he said, oh, let's try something outside of like, especially the outro is another example of that. Where we're playing, I'm playing the and these guys are playing the one. So there's a lot of that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That was kind of like, that was all the stuff we hashed out when we were rehearsing.
Yeah. We talked about those things. And, what happened was I knew that I wanted something to help to carry the harmony of the vocals.
Yeah.
Right, because at that section in the second verse is a really cool harmony, and without getting too specific about the songs for people who maybe don't remember it, but that was just something that was cool about that particular piece of the song that Justin put his stamp on. But more importantly, the chorus I think is where you put your stamp on it, because we had the idea of carrying this. Really, just at the end of the day, it's a four chord progression.
Yeah,
right. But that changes halfway through. But what made it really cool was all the walking patterns that you added to it.
Yeah,
right. And to be honest, we've not had a bass player do it right since, or at least do it the way that you did it. You know what I mean?
Sorry, I'm good.
It was, it was really, really special. And, I feel like for the first period of, our band, those first few years, even after we came out with the second EP, Etches, that song, Players of Paradox, was something that most people always look forward to seeing our live shows. We always played Players because everybody loved to hear it. And it was because the chorus was so good. Yeah. And I think the chorus was good because of the way that you played that bass line.
Yeah, it was, dude, like some of the creativity that just comes out of that whole album, dude, that you were doing, I was like, damn, man, that's pretty damn good, man. And I'm like, okay, here's for you guys watching and listening too. I got to know the band. Obviously, me and Kyle are related through marriage, but I got to know the band here. This is the band that I got to know. I didn't get to know any other version of the band. This is the by gesture I originally knew.
Yeah,
and quite frankly, it's the one that I'm like, okay, dude, like I can't miss a show, man. I think I've seen you guys like the three of you like what.
20 times,
and then I had to work sound for you guys one time at the Pasadena bar.
Oh, Old Town Pub.
Old Town Pub. It was like something.
You're right.
92 North. East.
Oh yeah.
Oh, 72 North.
Yeah. 72 North. That's
that changed to a German bar. It was cool.
Yeah. It's like a Steiner bar, or whatever.
You recorded the original Humanity.
Yes.
That's when that was like within the first month I met you, we all started
and then they had this weird track called Indigo Rogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get their Pro Tools session and they had like 10 plugins in one track.
And I think you started
I was like, wow.
Hey, why not?
Like you recorded with us at my house on that.
This is when I was like fresh out of like audio engineer school, dude. And me and shout out to my buddy Etter.
What's up, Etter?
We were looking for some type of like rep work, you know, just kind of like to get our feet wet. And I'm like, dude, we need to go work with those guys.
Yeah,
and exactly. Like, okay. And he asked me why. And I'm like, no, we just got to work with him. I go, dude, the drummer's badass. I go, my nephew Kyle is in the band. I'm like, what could go wrong? And dude, we got a crash course, man, because miking up his drum kit is a pain in the ass. Because once you mic, audio engineers, warning, if you get a very OCD drummer set up and then let them do everything, because Clifford will move everything you just did. Like he's a lot, and I appreciate what he does because he's such a badass, but he adjusts everything like last minute, but it sounds fucking perfect and nothing ever falls. I don't think I've ever seen a kick drum move out of the way. No cymbals are falling.
Yeah, they call me the Rain Man of drums.
His drum is hard, man.
Definitely got a little dissembled. Yeah.
But another track on the EP is another personal favorite of mine is Manifest. And at first, okay, you sent me a demo, a rough mix that Danny had done just to kind of critique it. But I was like, shit, I was more impressed with the fucking song. Then I'm like, I think this is done, dude. Like, I'm like, maybe do this.
Remember 38 Degrees, your birthday party?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because I had that earlier that year, you guys were in the studio with Danny. Because my birthday fell in February. No, I think
that was right after.
No, my birthday's in February 2013. You guys were in the studio like around February, March.
Of 2013.
Yeah.
No, I think it was April. Right? I think it was April.
Similar time frames.
And you guys are already tracked it. Right. And I'm like, fuck, dude, like this shit bumps, dude.
Slaps.
No, I remember I was telling Kyle earlier that I'm like, okay, it's probably one of those fucking dungeon demos, right? I play it back. He sent me a Dropbox link. I turned it up. The first thing I heard is like, I guess it's a swell from the cymbal, and then you and Clifford in sync with the transients of the bass and the kick drum, just boom, boom. And I was like, okay, yeah. this ain't no demo, dude. I couldn't understand what the fuck this guy was doing on guitar. And then I seen him play live, and I'm like, that's out of my league, dude.
I still don't
know. No, he like, he looks like,
this guy is
fucking Jewish, man. I thought it was a riff you play with just your picking hand, but no, you use what, four fingers?
He uses the elbow, he slaps it.
Seven bass.
I use the pick and I use my fingers for that intro. But yeah, we had a really good time writing and honing the timing. Yeah. Of the stops for the introduction of that song. I remember we were just kind of like having a good time writing the main riff, like when it becomes the full fledged, everybody's jamming and we're into it, part of the section, I guess you would call it the hook.
Well, like that riff, the main riff that you came up with, and then it's carrying on after Cliff's you know, filling roll into the verse.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the guitar's dancing around like this and everything's being carried by the low end.
Yeah, it was really cool. That was
fucking funky as fuck, dude. I was like, yes, dude, this is good.
I remember writing that in the rehearsal studio. We would be jamming on it thinking like, this shit fucking rocks. Like, I remember when we were playing it, I was like, this is one of the coolest fucking riffs we've ever written.
Yeah.
And it just felt good. You know what I mean? You know, sometimes when you're jamming on something and it's already locked live, right? That should be the ideal riff for anything. A lot of stuff these days is kind of like programmed or just written on a computer. And you're like, okay, it sounds good on the computer. Hopefully it sounds good live kind of thing.
It should be the other way around.
Right. Yeah. Right. So this was definitely something that was super organic. And then it was a fun process to kind of reverse it and say, let's create an introduction to the EP, you know, with this song that chops up the main riff and builds it in little pieces. And that became the introduction. And Danny actually came to our rehearsal studio. We had a lockout He came to the lockout that we had.
Yeah.
And he, you know, when we were already set to work with him, he was like, okay, I want to, you know, help you guys with pre-production. He came in and he gave us the idea to shorten our intro. We had it. It wasn't too much longer than it is on the recording, yeah. But he was like, okay, it needs to be a little shorter. So he helped us to kind of figure out how to chop that up. And then what you hear is, definitely a collaborative effort on that introduction and really that whole song.
I would say it's probably one of the best opening tracks I've heard like in any album. And I'm not just, you know, fanboying here, but you have to understand also, I'm mostly a musician too, but when you have peers or family members that play in a band and they're that fucking good and they deliver something just like you guys did, I'm just like, fuck it, dude, give me more. What else you guys got? But then I would see you guys live and that was a whole different story, dude, because
we fucked it all up.
Like, because we were drunk. I'm
joking. It was amazing. Like even to this day, like, some of my friends that became fans, like, you know, Jonathan and all them, they're like, dude, like
Jonathan and Justin, right?
They were avid fans of you guys, right? And especially Justin, man. You know, my bro, Justin. What's up, Justin? He tried to learn all the songs on drums, but he's like, dude, how does he do this? I'm like, I don't know. And then I discovered, true story, STEM software. You know what STEM software is? It'll separate.
It's kind of like stem cell research, right? Yeah.
let me inject you right here in the bus.
Artificial insemination for muscle recovery.
Remember Species?
Yeah. With Natasha.
Love that movie.
Yeah.
What this STEM technology does now, it's AI that separates each instrument. Mm. Isolated, right?
Why can't they do that?
It's fucking crazy. But I gave him his STEM without asking Danny for it, because Danny has everything.
Right.
And it was perfect. And I'm like, that's how you play it. He goes, oh, dude, I can't do that. And I'm like, too bad. And then I go, now listen to the bass line. And you can clearly hear all of Justin's bass line in this fucking, software, dude. It's fucking crazy.
Well, that's
and
fucking
some
terrifying.
Of the shit. some of the shit.
I don't want to hear it naked.
on the Manifest verse, he does all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
That's true,
yeah.
You're just kind
a lot of
like,
fills and stuff like that.
And singing.
He's carrying
the whole verse.
He's carrying it, yeah.
Sure. That's fucking hard.
I mean, that has always been Justin's role on that album. If you listen to the whole thing,
yeah,
you're gonna find there are a lot of spots where the guitar feels like a layer, and this was really kind of the way that it was intended. The guitar is a layer on the top, and the bass and the drums are playing together in a way that even if you're really not listening to that specifically, because hopefully you're listening to the lyrics, it's moving you, right? It's carrying the song in a certain direction, and it's informing your body and, like, you know, where the groove's at. So that has always been the way that I wanted to write music for the band, because being a trio, you have to utilize each instrument as best as you can. You've only got three instruments.
Yeah.
You got to do what Rage Against the Machine does. You got to do what Rush does. They all completely, maybe not completely, but they definitely have their own rules.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they're, you know, in the same area, but,
Even when you would play live, speaking of, you know, your live setup, I would notice that they would use two microphones on your amp. And one was out of phase.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
I think that was my maybe an stereo
effect. Like, I mean, either that or you use two cabinets, which is always a pain in the ass to do. But that's why when you would hear Kyle live, like the Viper Room, Whiskey, whatever, it sounded in stereo. Like it was two guitar players.
Mm-hmm. Really?
But obviously one, I could tell right now, I'm like, okay, one's out of phase. What they do is just put the polarity, whatever. And sorry, geek talk. So, but it sounded perfect. But it did sound, this is the freaky part, it did sound like there was a second guitar player on stage.
Well, that could be a handful of things. I mean, it could be some of the effects that I was using. You know, I was a big fan of using...
you still are.
Mild flange or a ring mod or like a feedbacker,
yeah.
which, the you know, the boss pedal that I was using at the time had a really cool feedback effect that essentially carried the original signal through and then duplicated a signal to make it sound like there was an amp that was feeding back. So yeah, there was a lot of cool tricks and stuff that we used for that first album.
What effect did you use for the intro to Players of Paradox?
Players of Paradox is something called a slow gear. And what that does is it ducks the attack out of a note. So for every note that you're hitting on the guitar, the initial attack is muted and it releases the volume out. So, that effect is something that actually I haven't found on a whole lot of other recordings or on a lot
some
of
pop
other,
music, maybe,
but a lot of other pedals, to be honest. The slow gear. So it's got that interesting.
Yeah.
It almost feels like it's coming at you in reverse.
Yeah.
Right.
That's exactly what it's
saying. So there was a handful of really cool effects and stuff that I feel like were unique to that album in the way that the guitar was recorded.
Yeah.
The ring mod also.
Justin used a few too. I noticed.
Wait, like on a side note though, I gotta take a mad piss.
Dude. Oh, let's talk to you about Cliff.
Get it, Cliffy.
When you come back, get me one of those Wayne ales.
Yeah.
Because you drank mine.
Was it that you used on Humanity? It was like a killer overdrive, dude.
No, well, that was just, that was just like bare bones. A big muff. That was it.
It was a big muff?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a big muff. You get that chunk in there and you can't go wrong. Like, you learn from the masters. Cliff Burton was a master. Hell, like, you, Morley Wah and Big Muff, you can't fuck around with that. That's effectively what it was. And during the breakdown, that song was a little bit of a delay. There's a lot of fun effects playing. And that was like the first time I kind of like branched out because like, during that time, I was very much like trying to keep it very organic, bass playing. I'm a huge fan of Ryan Martiny from Mudvayne, which is probably like my biggest inspiration. There's all the staples, right? John Pastorius and Wooten and Steve Giorgio, Webster, Claypool's way up, right? So like, there's all these bass heroes, right? But like, for me, like snap it into gear was like what I wanted to do, and still like Ryan Martiny. I don't know if you heard the Beyond the Glare stuff. It's jazz. It's just it's fusion stuff, and it's really cool. And the bass is in the forefront, and like you could really like pick apart and just see so many different things. So yeah, that guy was a huge inspiration. So the effects were super cool, and a lot of it was like what he was doing. And again, like you always want to play on what's happening musically. Yeah. You don't want to just stomp on anything, and that's kind of what the effects were able to add to that
effect. Yeah. Because no one ever wants to be Jason Newsted in Injustice for All Men.
What do you mean? His bass tone was incredible.
I know, but the fucking mix in that album pissed me off until they re-released it. And there's a new cut, I guess, going around, but they're not really publicizing it, where you can actually hear his bass cut through the mix.
I think people have... Thank you. Oh, the white one.
But people don't understand how important the bass player is to a fucking band.
They probably use that stem technology that we're talking about. I've heard the album in here.
Yeah.
With his original bass pumped up in the mix. And his bass his bass tone is amazing. It's amazing. But the problem is I don't think it blends well with the guitar tone.
Yeah, because the guitar tone was
Tone was meant to have that weird vacuumy bass mid thing going on because there was no bass.
But at the same time, could we all agree that Injustice? I'm gonna throw it out. Kind of controversial here, but I think Rust in Peace is the best thrash metal album of all time. Then I'd probably say Injustice right there, Bon.
Yeah,
Rust in Peace is amazing.
But I mean, at the same time, you got to give kudos like this guy we were talking about, like bass playing and the separation and almost the melding of melody and rhythm is like, this guy's a fucking great drummer. I get a lot of that inspiration from like guys like, you know, like Cynic, like Sean Reiner and Sean Malone, which is like, in my opinion, fucking one of the greatest rhythm sections of all time in metal.
Oh, yeah.
And, like I had the pleasure of jamming with this guy. So it was easy. It was an easy transition, just like jam with these guys and hear what he's doing and also hear the intricacies of what he's doing and just kind of meld that. And that's
what huge for a lot of young musicians. I know you guys will be watching this. It's big when you have a drum and bass combo like they had, because it makes it much easier for guitar players and singers just to kind of like, okay, I'm just going to place it here, 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 and there. And then you just chop it up. That's it. But you guys know as well as I do, there's some bands that, oh my God, dude, their bass and drum combos suck. And that's why they keep going through different drummers. They keep going through different basses because they're trying to find that marrying.
You're talking about like local bands.
Yeah. It's like, and they make the same mistake over and over. And it's like, oh man, like you got it. Okay. First and foremost, in my opinion, drummer should always come first.
Yeah, 100%.
You don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, Billy Corgan stated that, right? Like, yeah. Billy Corgan, that's how he just said, like, Smashing Pumpkins was born. He's like, Jimmy Chamberlain showed up. He's like, oh, I think we have a band here. That was it.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. Jimmy Chamberlain is such a good drummer that, like, that
pulls it off. My favorite drummer.
Yeah.
Dude, he makes everything work. And it's not overplaying. It's not underplaying. It's just, like, playing for the song. And that's huge.
It's so interesting because that's exactly what you guys did in Cognizant. You guys played for the fucking song. And that's why it's like, dude, yeah. And I think for people that have not heard Cognizant, I recommend you listen
to it. Yeah, please go check it out.
It's almost like the forgotten EP now that the new ones came out.
Yeah, it's so long ago, but it hangs up there with anything that we've ever released.
Yeah.
And to be honest, if you look at it from the snapshot in time of where it came from, I think it might even be still to this day our best EP.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the thing that happens with a lot of bands, your first releases, your
cousin roses.
Because it's the material.
Spaghetti.
I mean, and it's only three songs. It's only three songs, but it's
Spaghetti Incident.
Yeah. It's spaghetti. It's 15
horrible covers.
How long is the EP?
It's like
15 minutes.
So it's only three songs, but it's like half of what other full length albums are. And I think we're pretty happy with where we were. And back to your point about, these guys being an amazing rhythm section. I don't think at the time I appreciated them enough because of how much we were trying to write. And, back then I was kind of a little bit too controlling with like, oh, it's got to be this way. It's got to be that way. But I still appreciated you guys, of course, at the time, but there was one thing that happened that made me realize how good I had it having you guys as my backing band or rhythm section, if you will. And that was an older gentleman at the 72 North was watching us. He was a musician or an instructor, maybe at a university or some college or something. And he had
shout out to Enrique.
No. He was an older black guy. I don't remember his name, but he had a fedora. He had like a coat and he was like looking super cool. I don't know if he had like a jazz background, but he had two younger girls with him.
So specific.
So, well, I just remember because after what he said, he stuck out in my mind.
Low-key pimp.
And then I also subsequently ran into him at some other event. But anyway.
Oh, really?
So he was talking to me after we performed our set and he was singing our praises. Okay. But specifically, he was singing your praises because he was like, man, you guys are great. He's like, you're an amazing singer. He's like, but you got something special with that rhythm band. He's like, you know, singers like you. He's like, you got something. But what other good guitar players and singers like you don't have is an amazing rhythm section. He's like, that's special. So yeah, I remember that stuck with me. And I was like, man, that's cool. I appreciate that. Yeah. So, and then, like I said, subsequently, I actually saw him at another gig. He recognized me. I didn't know him. He was like, oh, man, how you doing?
How many years later?
One other story. A couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pretty funny.
To this day, I talk to him daily.
On Facebook Messenger. So, okay. There's a re-release coming up. All right. Give us the date. Give us the details. What's so special about this re-release? It's a 10-year.
The date is the 14th, right?
That's the next Friday.
Next Friday, the 14th.
July 14th.
It's the same exact.
At 12 midnight.
It's the same first three songs. We didn't like remaster them or anything. But then we have the Humanity remix with Troy Maturo. You remember Troy?
Maturo, más duro.
Electronic artist Troy Maturo was a friend of ours.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got the stems from Danny Balistocki. That's the individual track files. And he really only used the guitar and the vocal, right?
He did everything.
But he was obviously influenced by the original song. That was his favorite song from the EP. We were friends at the time. I was performing with him at Downtown Disney.
Yeah, that was crazy.
On his music. Yeah. He's an amazing electronic artist. He has such a huge catalog.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, his music is so cool and just chill to listen to. You know, if you're just like relaxing or lounging or whatever. Yeah, he's an amazing artist. Yeah, and yeah, and anyway, he had the idea to remix it. And we're like, fuck it, man. Let's see what you can do. And he created this killer remix. And it was kind of like, for a little while, it was like kind of bits and pieces. And he's a super busy guy with a family. And then, he finished it. I don't remember exactly how long after he started it, he finished it. It was some time. But here we are 10 years later. The remix
coming out.
Yeah, the remix is out. We're going to be
on the dance charts.
Releasing it. We're going to be releasing it with a music video.
It did come out really good, though.
Yeah.
Have you heard it yet?
Yeah. I've heard bits and pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing is killer from start to finish because he's so creative. He completely reimagined the track.
Yeah. And his style. And he has a very specific style.
And I got to be honest, you know, obviously Humanity is like our child. You know, we created that, we wrote it, but I almost like his version better just because it's so different and there's so much energy. He came up, he chopped up the riffs and he did something totally unique with it. Like I said, super creative dude. And anyway, I'm really excited because we're also releasing it with a music video with like AI. And that works really well with the nature of the lyrics, you know, because it's about trying to detach yourself from reality because you don't like what you see. And then there's also, you know, a section in the pre-chorus that's all about what is it to be human? Is it all about getting ahead in life and greed and self-interest at the, you know, sacrifice of your fellow man? So, you know, we just continue in that way. And what are we becoming? Are we becoming machines? Are we becoming, you know, this other, we're evolving to escape from humanity? So that's kind of like the questions that are brought up in the lyrics. And I think it's just matches really cool with the AI art and the robotic nature of everything. So
remember the movie AI though?
Yeah, of course.
Shout out to Haley Joel Osment.
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's coming over in a couple hours.
Or Stanley Kubrick.
He's waiting for the five. So he'll be here soon.
did you know that John Connor is smiling, frowning upon us right now for making fun of the AI? John Connor.
John Connor.
John Connor.
My wife waited on him multiple times. He aged at Green Street.
Did you know that I was named after Connor Reese?
What's his name again? Wait, what's his name again?
Wow. John Connor. Edward Furlong.
Yeah, he eats at Green Street a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. Yeah, the music video for the Humanity remix is going to be released next Monday. And then the
track
song.
Number five.
Yeah. Well, maybe four. I don't know. It depends on how we do it. But
track number one is open the EP up.
No, track number. What do you mean?
Wait, how many? Humanity Remix is going to be.
It's four.
It's going to be four. Oh, okay. Track number five is going to be. Players of Paradox remixed.
So we're hopping on the N64 remake train.
What?
Okay, so.
Did he tell you about it?
Yeah.
All right. So here's
the backstory about how it became popular.
Yeah, in a moment. So I had the idea because we were going to re-release.
I respect Rogan.
You got that snare.
I got a piss now too.
All right, so we're gonna wait. I can't tell the story until you're done.
Okay. Oh, no, wait, but one thing I forgot to mention is because I know a lot of the stuff I'm saying about the band is kind of going over people's heads if you guys are not familiar with my gesture, but. Yes, they do have other catalogs out. They have approximately what, five releases?
Four EPs. But
and then we're about to come out with the fifth one within the next year.
Yeah.
But we had a single, Colorblind, out there.
Yeah.
No, but that's part of the EP.
But now it's part of the EP. So
I helped them track and they're pains in the asses for working with me. So and that was we try to get true story. This is in my old work place. We could not get the squeak out of
the Clifford's
kick drum. I guess it was the pedal. God bless Danny Belastocchi. I told him, I'm like, hey, you might want to notch out this frequency and found it, but
nice.
Yeah. That song, like I said,
completely ruined the whole track.
Yeah. I was like, but they do have other catalogs.
Yeah. Please go check out, our full catalog on Spotify or wherever you listen to music. But yeah, I mean, this is all about the first release. It's definitely, I think, from start to finish, because it's only three tracks, but it is a full 15, 16 minute long listen. It's definitely a journey. I had, a friend put it really well that I super appreciated. He was like, man, this is like a really good workout EP. He was like,
he's ripped.
I don't know if it was a treadmill listen for him or what, but he put it that way, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, man, this is actually, I can see that, you know, because it's so short, there's no like ballad.
So the N64 thing.
Okay. All right. So let's tell that story. So, and this is not, you know, nothing huge. It's just a silly, you know,
yeah, it's version. More of a joke.
Like, yeah. It's a silly version. It's fun. It's a silly version of the track that we wanted to recreate. I told Cliff, I was like, well, first of all, Cliff told me, he was like, do you realize that it's been 10 years since we released Cognizance? Yeah. And I was like, holy shit, man, we got to do something.
Wait, should we tell him about the distributor?
In a minute. Yeah. So he told me that, and I was like, we got to do something special. Just because that's big. I mean, Cliff and I have been jamming forever, but Vigester is like our special baby now, because we've, you know, been working on that consistently with a specific idea for that band. And 10 years is a long time, even though technically speaking, apparently we've been jamming with Justin since 2008. So
yeah. But we didn't have anything professional.
Right. So, I mean, that was a big deal for us to get into the studio. That was our first time, you know,
it was recording. A huge upgrade.
Yeah. Professionally recording and being like, yo, we're paying for this. We got a specific amount of days. Yeah. We can't fuck this up. Get in there. Be serious.
Yeah.
So anyway, to commemorate that, I was like, all right, we gotta, you know, get Troy's remix out there. I knew Troy had it somewhere buried. He dug it up and we got ready. And I was like, okay, well, we're going to release the album with only one extra thing. I was like, let's do something for Players. I even wanted to try to get a live version of Manifest.
Yeah.
But, you know, the time was winding down. So I told Cliff, I was like,
nothing was that great either.
Right. We didn't have any really good live recordings of Manifest.
Yeah. And, well, let's play it live right now.
Yeah. Special edition drum.
We're going to give him our cajones.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
No, just give him pots and pans.
Pizza and beer edition.
Yeah.
So anyway, I told Cliff, I was like, hey, man, I think it would be really easy and cool and funny if we did an 8-bit version of Players, because I love the fucking Tool 8-bit.
It's so funny. NES style.
Yes. Yeah.
Sega style.
It's super fun. But then Cliff was like, man, that's kind of old.
No, yeah. Cause like 8-bit chiptune, like,
it was
really popular like 10 years ago.
Yeah. It had a resurgence.
Yeah. Exactly.
So all those things came out was, like Cliff said, maybe 10 years ago. He was like, well, what's happening right now?
Yeah. In the last year, so many people did the N64.
I've seen that. Yeah.
The first one I saw was the Radiohead and Rainbows.
Yes.
And it got like millions of plays. Yeah. Like they download the sound font. From Mario 64.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a supply.
Yeah.
So that.
And they do the whole album. I'm like, how do these people have time for this? But I mean, if it gets like 5 million views, it's worth it.
So that's what we're doing for
But like, this has to take.
Yeah. It's going
to
be
no, like
shit.
For the full albums of these bands, it has to take like 200 hours.
Oh, dude. It's a process.
Yeah. It should take some time, but.
And there's a bunch.
The way that I was able to do it pretty quickly, and it's to be honest, even to this moment, it's not complete, but it's very, very close and it'll be ready.
We just doing one song. So
yeah, it's very simple. The reason why it was easy and I was like, I know I can knock this out super quick is because I charted the music for the guitar.
I already had the data in the computer to transfer.
So the guitar and the bass was already like in a musical chart format, and the program that I have allows you to convert that to MIDI. So it's been a quick thing. In fact, the one person who was allowed to do the most work is really Cliff, because he had to program the drums. But anyway, yeah, that's something to look forward to. It's just kind of silly for fun, a little bit.
It sounds cool, man. It's like the actual F64 keyboards and drums.
Dude, I'm fucking looking forward to it. I'm super pumped for it.
I guess that's really it, man. Yeah. I don't know what else to ask. I mean, obviously, I've been around them for a while. Actually, this is the first time I'm seeing Justin in,
probably 9 years. No, 9 years.
I went to one of those gigs that you with you. It's all a blur. I don't know. This is when you had the old, I think it was a Honda Pilot, not Pilot.
Prelude?
Yeah, the Prelude, yeah. And the seat wouldn't go back or something like that. And then, you know, we couldn't find the aux cord or whatever. But again, it's next Friday, July 14th.
That's right.
Cognizance EP.
Stream that shit.
10th anniversary. If the Dodgers score 6, you get 6-piece chicken nuggets at McDonald's.
Don't forget the Jack and Box tacos from Lakers.
Yeah.
I just want to say a couple of things that we can maybe just spend 5 minutes on real quick.
Yeah, shoot.
Just so that we can reminisce a little bit. Favorite shows.
Oh, shit.
And maybe just favorite moment, like if you can remember anything. For me, I'll go ahead and say first with Justin. My favorite moment was when we were recording the album. And you were tracking bass. I think you tracked it in one day for 3 songs.
Fuck.
And Justin, that's impressive, man. Justin was fucking nailing these fucking takes. But I mean, it's a long process to record, regardless of how fast and how quick you can record it. There's the engineer and the producer needs to get everything all right with the sound and everything. Justin fucking took out a whole 12 pack by himself. Yeah. By himself.
Yeah, tracking the whole day.
He laid it down and he was still, after he finished, he was still having one more song to go. And I remember, I fucking took Danny aside. I was like, did Justin just fucking drink that whole thing? He's like, I've never seen anything like that. He was like, he's playing.
We got fun in games.
I was like, he played.
Now comes back.
He's like,
the first album.
It's working. It's working. That was his attitude. It's working. That was his attitude. He's like, I don't know what he's doing.
Don't kill the momentum.
Don't stop it. Like, give him more beer.
Give him another 12. Because
he's playing perfectly.
Yeah.
And I was flabbergasted, and Danny was too, but it was a funny moment. And, you know, there are other amazing moments about your musicianship and your personality and stuff. You're a great guy, you know, but I just remember that was something funny that happened and I was like shocked.
Now it's on camera, so I'm forever going to be the bassist of Dimebag Darrell.
Just getting smashed. On one fucking day take.
One take. I mean, like if that's how I'm going to die, like, fuck it. I'll take it.
Dude, pretty legendary.
That's legendary.
Yeah.
Pretty legendary.
Well, no,
Brian tracked the whole thing too on the camera.
Oh, yeah, we have that video.
Oh, Brian Cox, shut up, dude.
Okay, hold on.
Did you ever hear about Brian? He got, like, all successful in videography.
Really?
So, real quick, Cliff.
Because I remember he was filming.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, because this could be something.
He became the main videographer for Bring Me the Horizon.
Yeah. No shit.
Yep.
Cliff, I want to ask you, because it could be really funny, although it's probably too much time. Is that original video of us recording with Danny, the footage that Brian shot, is that on YouTube or anywhere that we can pull it up?
I privatized it, remember?
Okay, but so we can get
we can unprivatize it.
Okay, because I was thinking it could be just funny for us to like watch it. And
we have
laugh.
That. Remember the video we did?
Yeah.
All right, so keep talking. All right, anyway, my other favorite memory from back in the day, this next one will be with Cliff. And this isn't nearly as funny or anything, but it's really more of like an overarching kind of a thing. I just remember Cliff performing coincidentally again at that 72 North venue. It's a small venue with brick walls and a short stage. And Cliff was kind of like tucked and trapped into the corner.
And right.
Yeah. I just remember there was a moment, I think it was during Manifest when we were opening our set, and Cliff was fucking so into it. And I was like, we were kind of, you know, Cliff kind of has always gotten a little bit of frustration when he's setting up because there's the pressure of being on time, and Cliff, the drummers always have so much shit to set up. It's just tough, you know, it's tough, and he wants it to be right. And I just remember we finally got everything right. We're starting to play and he was so fucking intense. And I just fed off of that and we crushed it. Like we absolutely fucking crushed everybody and we were playing so good. It was just a moment that I remember. Like, I was like,
he was mad because his computer got a virus from LimeWire.
I was super pumped. No. Anyway, you guys share your moments if you have one. I'll pull up that video.
All right. Well, I will, Cliff, go ahead first. Go ahead first.
I'm gonna one of the coolest shows we played was at the bowling alley. Remember that?
Yes.
The Mr. Keys in the Highland Park.
That's right.
There was a shooting in the parking lot. Really? I remember that was one of the coolest shows.
Was it a civil dispute?
It was like packed too.
Between two law-abiding citizens?
Yeah. Wow. Pretty much. I think it was like
bowling alley.
It was like we had a duck and cover in the parking lot.
Wow.
But the set was worth it.
So I got two. One funny one and one like serene one, right? So I remember one show particularly we did. It was kind of like an A and B. I don't even remember the fucking location that we were at. But it was basically like one like electric set and then one acoustic. And I've never really done that before. So that was really cool. And we did a bunch of covers.
You guys did both?
Yeah. Right.
No shit.
Remember that set, guys? I don't even remember where it was. I think it was in like probably somewhere hood, probably like South Pass or something.
Hmm.
We did like an electric set and then we did an acoustic set. We did a bunch of covers and played a lot. And that was really cool. So that's one big memory outside of like the whiskey. And that was also a really like top end memory.
Those fucking whiskey shows are amazing, dude.
Yeah. And then the other one was like on the funny note, way back when we were first starting out, just like playing gigs like consecutively, we got like booked for a Battle of the Bands.
Oh yeah, in like OC.
Yeah. So the first band shows up and it's like a reggae band. The second band,
like every genre you can imagine.
Like the second band goes up and it's a reggae band. The third band goes up and it's us. And then the fourth and fifth band are also reggae bands.
Remember we played Schism,
dude? Yeah, we played like once.
Oh my God, I remember that.
And we still won Battle of the Bands. that was the funniest booking and the funniest show I remember. Yeah, yeah.
Like, here's a $50 gift certificate. It's shaky.
No, we didn't win. Hell no.
No, I think we won that show.
No, we didn't win that. There was like some rapper that won.
Well, fuck that guy. I'll strangle him in the street. Lena, let's go.
This is really funny.
Fuck.
Another cool memory that I have was when we were, because I just thought it was because you mentioned the Schism tool cover that we used to do.
We played that at the Battle of the Bands.
What was the place that we rehearsed that song where we had a line of people waiting out of the door when we finished the track? You remember that?
That was also the Echo Park in Glendale.
Okay. Like, what was the name of that band? You remember?
No, Bedrock? No, that's not where we're
at. No, I don't think so.
Bedrock is...
It might have been that.
Or
it
is downtown LA. Yeah.
No, I think it was like Glendale or something.
Yeah, that was like last...
San Fernando?
Fletcher. Yeah.
That's where System of a Down used to practice.
Right? I remember we were working on this cover and we had honed it. Justin's fucking tone was on point. I had a vocal processor that had the harmonies synced. Like I had really worked it out so you could change the keys. And then I had my guitar fucking delay all dialed in. And obviously Cliff was like somehow playing everything Danny Carey played on the track. And we fucking nailed that shit. I remember this one time. We didn't always play it amazingly, but this one time in the rehearsal spot, we fucking nailed it.
What?
And we were all pumped. I remember after it. And then somebody's knocking on the door. We're like, we just finished the last note, right? We just finished the last note and then there's just dead silence and we're stoked. And somebody's like, and we open the door and there's like, I don't know, 10 dudes in the rehearsal spot. And they're just like, whoa, you guys fucking killed it.
No fucking shit, dude.
There were just other musicians just waiting politely outside of the door. Like, they could have came in. Out of the room. Yeah.
That's Tool.
That's fine.
That's Tool.
Well, the song's fucking 18 minutes, so it's like you have, I mean, it's not really 18 minutes, but it's so long that you have a long opportunity to be like
bust in there
if you happen to just.
No, because Justin's tone was also on point, too.
Yeah, true.
Like watching you play it live, dude, of course, well, from what I saw, was it Justin Chancellor?
Yeah.
He picks it.
Yeah.
You never picked it.
Oh, dude, we should cover it now, my friend list.
You should. So much better. He uses two fingers. Actually, three. I've seen three, four.
Throbble.
No. Dude. Not to get too lost in the weeds here, but I played, like, my girlfriend's really not heard me play bass too much, but I sat there and played 46 and 2 on my fretless. And it's just like the funnest song, especially on a fretless just sliding all over the place. And it's like every, like, Justin Chancellor bass line. That guy.
Yeah, it's funny because
you remember Peaches, you lied?
Yeah, yeah. That was
Peach, not Peaches.
Peaches.
Oh, now you're talking about that. Yeah. President of the United States, right?
Yeah. All right, guys.
Move into the country.
Okay, guys, this is going to be the final piece of our podcast.
Oh,
I'm going to play this. I'm going to sync it up. I'm going to go ahead and like double it onto the podcast video so we can show our reactions. And then we'll call it a day. Edgar, thank you for having us.
Of course, man. Thank
you for hosting us.
Thanks for
Justin, thank you for
being here.
Yeah. God, I don't know. I love you guys. Come out.
Put it there.
Yeah.
Put it there.
All right. Cliff, don't leave me hanging.
Man.
Here we go, guys.
Let's see.
Already. Just look at how young Cliff looks.
Oh, my God.
Look at that. Look at that baby boy.
That's when he was still.
Holy shit.
Okay, here we go.
An apprentice at Maria's. Lord have mercy. Look at your face.
Hollywood.
Santa Monica. Live nice.
Look at the view mirror.
Look at all the face.
Give a shout out to
Danny, many pounds ago.
Okay, I told you a May and
say. I just related to him, you know, instantly connected.
What are you talking about?
About Danny starting the video for a long ass time.
Oh, that he probably shouldn't have been the person to start it.
Yeah.
But it's all good.
I said many pounds.
He's eloquent. Okay, I'm making some kind of weird face.
The authority,
no. All right, here we go.
You make some crazy green day, but we'll just disregard this and keep moving forward.
Look at, so this is me working on lyrics right here. And this is Justin, you know.
Practicing for tracking.
Working on his riffs. And then Zeus. Shout out to Zeus.
This guy's down here.
Now, look at that sexy bitch over there. Yeah.
Nice OPEC shirt.
My God. We're like children.
Bro, look at my hair. So fuck.
We're trying to bring something different.
Look at the concentration. I first started sounding like another band, and we're not satisfied with it. We're always trying to find a way where we can be original because it's such a key factor to the band. It's really hard for a lot of creative people to break the barrier of what means to them when you get things acceptable.
That's so cool,
that mustache.
He looks like a subway guy.
This is when I was first able to grow facial hair, so I was trying really hard to make it look good.
Dude, I'm 39. I still can't grow facial hair. But Danny can. Look at that motherfucker.
It was as simple as killer drummer, killer bass player, bad guitarist, and a fantastic singer. They all got together.
Yeah, it's like
with somebody. Four people.
That's how you're using this in 7 hours. Do this thing.
It's
like
it's just about being from the heart, being from the soul, which is standing yourself. we all play music that we basically enjoy. There's nothing fake about it. We're always trying to find a new angle with our music.
Did Brian cut their food?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian edited it.
Remember we did green food, so he didn't use any of it.
I was the first time I was in front of the camera. I was like, this is
real. We didn't use any other recent
food. Really?
He's like, they came out bad. Remember at my house?
I don't remember.
We went back to my house and we filmed the recent food.
Oh, wow.
And all these interviews. Just me and you.
No way.
And he said, it was bad.
I don't
know. So he just used us. Who did you know?
I think Brian thought it was bad, that's why he said the reviews were worse, we were gonna kind of chomp into something cool, we don't want to be just another fish in the pond, movie shark, epic dude.
that was a fucking stroll down memory lane.
Nice. Wow, wow.
Alright, cool.
And with that, this is the end, my friend. Thank you for coming on, man.
10 years.
Mother, I want to rap!
This salute. Is the end.
Salute, guys.
All right, see you guys.
Anybody know it?
Cheers.
Remember next week, July 14th.
We'll see you.
Make us. Peace.
Peace.
Later.